Welcome to Outspoken, a storytelling event in which all speakers identify as LGBTQ. The story you are about to hear was recorded live in front of a storytelling audience at Sidetrack in Chicago. Outspoken. Retell. Relive. Relate. Now, here's our story.
Please welcome Jackie.
There are a lot of Jews here. Has anybody... How many of you understand when I say I feel like we should say a Shehecheyanu or something like that? Yeah, that is way too many laughs for people. All right. I did have a scotch, and I'll tell a story. So I get a high out of taking care of my dying father. And by high, I mean a real high. Like the type of deep appreciation and just pure joy that takes from sharing your medical marijuana with your father. His medical marijuana. So let me tell you about my father. Anybody who knows my father, Art and Pep, know my father well, everybody calls him Poppy. And Poppy is 84, almost 85 years old, and he was born and raised in Cuba and came to this country in his 30s. After the Cuban Revolution. And here he met my mom, and he raised two daughters, my sister and myself, and he's lived long enough to see my sister and I both get married to wonderful spouses and have families, and he's been very proud of that. And the other thing I think he's been most proud of is having a job and working very hard all his life. That was a very big mantra for my father. And so... He was, for the past 25 years, what they called the wedding guy at the Skokie Courthouse. He was an administrative assistant and administrative clerk who would fill out your paperwork if you were going to get married. And I think one of his happiest days was when he finally was able to marry my wife, Annie, and I, when it was finally legal. And so you can imagine, yeah, let's do that, right? So you can imagine how devastating it was for him a few months ago to be told that he was forced to retire because he could no longer do his job. So Poppy's a Jubin, Cuban Jew. And as you can imagine, his accent is very thick and unusual. Think Ricky Ricardo meets Seinfeld. And... As a result, you know, he can be sometimes hard to understand, and like many people for whom English is their second language, he can mix his metaphors, right? So a couple of examples of this are recently when we told Poppy he could no longer work, he said, Yaki. He named somebody with a J at the beginning of their name, right? Said, Yaki, you are making a mountain out of your mothballs, right? Or when he met a friend of mine, a woman who was a little bit older who had not yet married, he said, but she is so beautiful. Why do you think she is still a splinster? So Poppy's, you know, accent has always been part of his charm, and that coupled with his outgoing nature, his hazel blue eyes, and his childish grin has always made him the life of the party. In late 2004, Poppy was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, and we were told he had about a year to live. And so what did I say, 2004? 14. Thank you. That's what happens when you have your spouse here. Why? Can you get me a scotch? In late 2014, my father was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, and we were told he had about a year to live. And it was at that time we understood that the chemo he would be getting would be strictly palliative, not curative. But what we didn't understand was that the forgetfulness in his memory was actually not due to aging, but due to early dementia. And what we really had no idea was that the chemo would exacerbate that very greatly. And, you know, this is... For my father, he is early enough in his disease most days where he realizes that he has dementia and he is quite literally losing his mind. And so often we will find him with his head in his hand and his fingertips pressed against his temples, trying so hard to will his memory back. And what happens when that happens for someone who's already nervous is that becomes very anxious, and the more anxious Poppy becomes, the more withdrawn he becomes. And sometimes we'll just find him sitting in silence, and you can actually hear the fear just from the look across his face. But what is even harder as his child than when the anxiety is quiet is when the anxiety speaks, because it's unfiltered. And by being unfiltered, I don't mean inappropriate. Please understand that Poppy's been inappropriate all his life. This is a man who is a natural-born storyteller, and so therefore he would cross the line for a laugh anytime, like the time he told his three then preteen grandchildren about his experience losing his virginity with three of his friends in Havana, a tale that involved those young men, a prostitute, and an unexpected outbreak of pubic crabs. So, unfiltered is really different than inappropriate, right? And so, unfiltered is unrelenting and repetitive. And so, as many of you know, people who have dementia, one of the things that can happen is they'll get into a cycle and he'll ask the same question over and over. Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Maybe 24 times in a matter of 2 minutes. So one Saturday night, our son was out, and Poppy and I are sitting in our living room, and one of Poppy's anxiety mantras begin. And Annie's trying to calm his nerves and says, "Would you like something to drink?" And never a drinker, my father says no. And then he becomes very quiet. And then he says something that we never expected to hear. "Did you have any marijuana cigarettes?" Now, this is funny for a lot of reasons. Not only that he said marijuana cigarettes without any irony, but that my father is not a man who had ever gotten high or even thought about it any time in his life. This is the man who took my sister to the midnight movie when she was 16 and literally, Northtown Theater on the north side, yelled fire in a theater because somebody was smoking reefer behind them, right? My sister asked to transfer. But what happened was, it was obvious that he was sort of serious. And as luck would have it, I had had a friend who had given me a medical edible for Poppy about a month prior. And I didn't even think about it because I couldn't imagine my father would ever want something like that. But I remembered that I had it, and I pulled it out of the little hiding place. We have a 16-year-old, so I did hide it. And I pulled it out, and it was much smaller than I thought, right? It was about like this big, like the size of a pen cap, and in hermetically sealed packaging. And we opened it up, and it was scored in 4 pieces. And Annie and I decided if we were going to give this to Poppy, one of us should do what he's doing so we could feel the dose, right? And so it wasn't that hard to figure out which one of us would do that, because Annie also had never really gotten high except for that one time we called the Amsterdam incident in our house. So Annie, deciding she's the adult, breaks off a piece for me, breaks off a piece for my father. She gives us each a quarter and just sits back and watches. And unfortunately, what happens is Poppy gets into one of his mantras again. "I don't feel anything. I don't feel anything. I don't feel anything," he says, you know, after only a few minutes. And this goes on and on for about 20 minutes. And I'm not really feeling anything. So Annie breaks off the other pieces, hands me one, hands him one, and says, "I mean, it's small. How potent can it be?" Let's remember the Amsterdam incident. And so at this point, I pick up the packaging as I'm swallowing the second half, and I look, and it says, "Could take 30 minutes to feel the effect." And almost if on cue, I feel the effect. And whoa, This was not like smoking a 3-foot bong listening to Cat Stevens in my University of Wisconsin dorm room. This was completely different. This was a pure sense of floating, and I don't know what was looser, my body or my brain. And suddenly I look over at my father, and there he is, and he's smiling. And then he's giggling. And then he is oohing and aahing and saying, "Oh, this feels jummy, jummy, jummy." And at this point, I'm not nearly that articulate, right? So I say, I can't even say anything, and I can hardly form a word because the second piece has now kicked in with me. But the higher I get and the less I'm able to talk, the more my father becomes his old self. And soon he is sitting up and telling Annie and I stories, not the inappropriate ones, but the ones he used to tell my sister and I when we were little kids at bed. The story of Picaro, his rooster who lived with him at Sabania, Cuba. The story of my grandmother who was the village witch doctor. She practiced Santeria that they called Dr. Turinga. The story of taking my mother on their first date to My Fair Lady. And the more I looked at him, the more peaceful he became. And we belly laughed so hard that night that it was hard for us to separate and go to bed. And finally, when Annie and I crawled into bed, we remarked on seeing that old Poppy, someone who we realized had been missing slowly from our lives. The next morning, I had to go get my father up to give him his medication and to get our day started. And I half expected, or maybe more fully hoped, that he would be the guy I put to bed the night before. But when I went there, and I, you know, shook him gently and said, "Poppy, it's time to get up." He looked me square in the eyes and said, "Where's my phone? Where's my phone?" Thank you.
This has been Outspoken. Outspoken is curated by David Fink and is hosted by Kim L. Hunt and Art Johnston. Audio production is by Ray Teresi. Music by Josh McLean. General manager of Sidetrack is me, Brad Bailoff. Outspoken is a storytelling event with speakers from the LGBTQ community and is recorded live in front of an audience at the legendary Sidetrack in Boys Town of Chicago. To find out more about Outspoken, go to SidetrackChicago.com. Outspoken. Retell. Relive. Relate. Thank you for listening.